The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 7th, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my partner, my co-producer, my engineer. We're having a little trouble with the mic here. My co-producer, Ken Norton, and he also is my webmaster. Welcome. Welcome, Ken. Good morning. What a beautiful day.
Good morning, Elaine.
It's amazing what a beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County. I mean, I think it rained last night a little bit, but when you got up and we saw all those beautiful clouds, it's just amazing just to see them and just to have a feeling that here we are in this beautiful, beautiful county. And yesterday, what an event we had downtown Santa Rosa. I was reading the Press Democrat this morning. Pardon?
Saturday.
Oh, excuse me. It was Saturday. What an event we had. It was the hands-off protest. Would you call it a protest, a gathering? How would you?
I'm going to call it a rally.
Okay. It was a hands-off rally. And it was amazing that the Press Democrat actually reported that there were over 5,000 people in downtown Santa Rosa. I have Sabrea Briere on the air with me here. Well, how close were they with that?
I have no clue. It was a lot.
Well, Ken and I, we were not able to go, so what we did is we did protest in the car. We had all these different signs and honking. It was such an amazing feeling. So congratulations to you. It was absolutely wonderful.
But, you know, it wasn't just Santa Rosa. It was all over the county and all over the country. And we had protests and rallies in other countries, too. Everybody who could was standing up and saying hands off.
No, it was amazing. It really wasn't. When we were driving in our car and we saw all the people walking around in downtown Santa Rosa with all these great signs, it's just, a person emailed me and she said I was sorry that she didn't see me walking, but she wanted me to know that it gave her hope. It gave her hope. So thank you so much. And we're going to be doing, joining me in the studio this morning is Sabrea Briere, one of the leaders of Indivisible Sonoma County. Indivisible Sonoma County formed in January 2017. And I know that Sabrea has been with the You've been with Indivisible since 2017. Am I correct?
That's right.
It's amazing. The members of the organization connect Sonoma County with people and help them to express their power and to stand up and to just do many, many things, and we'll be talking about that. And also, as a second guest I have with me this morning is a friend of mine, a dear friend, Sue Hicks, and I brought Sue in. She's a retired nurse, and when I decided to bring Sue in, because she actually participated at the rally, and I want her to give me some feedback and let everybody listen. And you know, it's very important that after these events happen that we get more and more information. We get information on Facebook, we get information through the newspapers, over the radio, because once the situation is over, it's over. But if you can get some memory and some momentum as you listen to it, when the next event comes up, I know people are going to say, boy, I wish I went to that last one. And I know we're going to talk about several different events that are happening. In fact, when I went on Indivisible's website, they have a whole section called What's Next. And I just got exhausted just reading it. It was so amazing. And I want to talk a little bit about their mission. I think their mission is very important. It's to mobilize and organize the people of Sonoma County by connecting them with the political processes to fight for equality and justice. And I have, like I said, Sabrea is one of the organizers, and I have to say congratulations and give you a big shout out. It was an amazing, amazing success. Everybody that I talked to said, wow, Santa Rosa really came out. Sonoma County really came out. And we're going to be talking about this gathering and its impact. And, you know, this action took place across the United States. And I was unable to attend, and I'm grateful that I can do this show and report of what took place. And it was so interesting for Ken and I. We decided, we took me, Ken, and Rosie, got in our car, and we decided to do our rally in the car. We just rode around about 6 or 7 times and just honked our horn, and people just really, really got excited. And I love the when the woman wrote me about, she said that she had hope. That's how I feel. I have hope. You know, when you see the people come out like that, they say, hey, hands off, you know, get off of our backs. I mean, I still cannot understand what's going on. The more I listen to it, the more I try to analyze, the crazier I get. So it was really very heartfelt to see all these people out in the street. And we've had some wins. You know, there's a lot of pushback. A lot of the courts are very active with what's going on, and there's an awful lot of pushback. And as far as women go, we're making history all over the country. I want to do a special congratulations to Susan Crawford, a Dane County judge who led legal fights to protect union power and abortion rights and to oppose voter ID. And she won a seat in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And it was so interesting, her opposition or her competition or the guy that was running with her was endorsed by Elon Musk, and he put something like $22 or $20 million into this campaign, and it was a landslide. I think she made it by 10 points, which is really, really an amazing, amazing feat. But you know, it seems to me that what's happening now is people are kind of waking up. You know, we've been in la-la land for quite a few, I would say a few decades, to be honest with you. And all of a sudden, when this comes on the scene, and then we're scratching our heads saying, what is going on? And then all of a sudden, we see what's going on, and all of a sudden, people are saying, hey, I can't sit still. I have to do something. And I think that we saw that this Saturday. We saw it across the nation. We saw people standing up. And I just love the signs. The signs were just amazing. It was amazing. So that's all I can say. So a shout out to, and I know Indivisible was involved across the nation. You know, I think they were key organizers. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
You know, and what's so interesting about this organization, when they first started, it was just a little group. And now all of a sudden, organizing a big rally like this across the nation.
We did it in the first administration, too. People forget we were there at the beginning of the Trump administration. We were there. But people got lulled by the Biden administration, which was really quiet. We got calm by Biden. But here we are with Trump again. And honestly, Trump 2.0 is so much worse than Trump 1.0 that it's hard to reconcile how anybody could be president and decide that law doesn't count.
Well, that's what a dictator says.
And it's what we have. We have somebody who's gone to the Supreme Court today to say, I don't want to obey the law. Please tell the lower courts I don't have to.
Well, he's learning little by little by little.
We hope and pray that the Supreme Court says, yes, you have to obey the law.
Well, let's just, we got to keep marching. That's all there
That's
is
right.
to it. Very interesting. Well, as you know, every Monday we do a part of the show. It's called Our History is Our Strength. And April 5th, 1911 was a very, very important, event that happened. Actually, you know, like I say this over and over, my father was a union man, and I know how strong and how important unions are. Well, on April 5th, 1911, 100,000 to 500,000 people marched in New York City to attend the funeral of 7 unidentified victims of the Triangle Shirtwaist Company fire in late March. And why do I say that was an important event? Because at that time, the factories, especially the garment factories, were union organizing. And what happened is the Triangle Waste Factory was the only factory that kind of held out. So the factory occupied the 8th, 9th, and 10th floors of the 10-story arch building on the northwest corner of Green Street and Washington Place. in Greenwich Village in New York City. And, you know, I lived in Greenwich Village for about 4 or 5 years, and it's very small. And it's hard to – when I first recognized that that's where the Triangle Waste Company was, I thought, wow, I didn't realize that they actually had garment factories out then. And what happened, a fire broke out, and the doors were locked because – before the women could leave, they would open the doors and they would inspect them to make sure they did not take needles or threads or steal anything from the factory. But this on this day when the fire broke out, boom, that was it. And all these women died and people were jumping out of windows. It was a horrible thing. But it did spur more and more unionization at that time. And what was so interesting is, and we're going to say happy birthday to her, was Frances Perkins, who was the first cabinet member and the Secretary of Labor. And she was a social worker at that time in Greenwich Village, and she was going to the subway when all of a sudden she stopped in front of that fire and saw what was going on with the women jumping out of the windows and children. It was just a devastating sight to her. And she said that if she ever had a chance, that if she ever got put to a position where she could help to strengthen the unions, to bring more security for women, and also to get some good children labor laws, that she would be very happy to do that. And what ended up happening when President Roosevelt was put into office, well, he appointed her as the Secretary of Labor, the first woman, and she did amazing things. She brought in child welfare, she brought in child safety, she brought in Social Security, she brought in a 40-hour week. I mean, this was just an amazing woman. So she was born, let's see, oops, I turned the page, let me get here. She was born on April 10th, 1880, and she died in 1965. Boy, she wasn't amazing. She's one of my heroes, to be honest with you. Now, of course, you know that we are recording live this morning at KBBF 89.1 FM, and I would be amiss if I didn't announce this one. On April 10th, 1930, well, happy birthday to another one of my heroes, and that's Dolores Huerta, Chicana activist, labor organizer, and co-founder of the United Farm Workers Union. I just love Dolores. And if you go on www.womenspaces.com, you can see a wonderful, wonderful interview with her. Well, time is going by pretty quickly, and we are going to take a little musical break right now. And when we come back, I'm really honored. I'll be talking about Indivisible with Sabra Briere from Indivisible Sonoma County. And also we're going to be having Sue Hicks, who is a woman who attended on Saturday the rally, and we're going to get her opinion and try to integrate it together. So let's go ahead. Let's take a musical break right now, Ken, and we're going to play Democracy, sung by the Byrne Sister Band.
It's coming through a whole new air. That it ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy's coming to the U.S. It's coming through a crack in the wall. Flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, the brave, the bold, the battered, the heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the streets, the holy places where the races meet, and from the homicide.
that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve, who will eat. From the wells of disappointment, where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA. To the USA. Sail on, sail on. Oh, mighty ship of state. To the shore.
USA, what a powerful song that is. And just to let my listeners know, that was part one. When we take the second musical break, we're going to play the second part of it. That is one of the most powerful songs, I think, and is very timely for what's going on in the world today. Well, for folks just joining in, you are listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I want to remind all my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, the Board of Directors, its members, or Women's Schools. Women's School, boy, I'll tell you. Women's Spaces. You know, I've been gone for almost 3 months. It's amazing to be on the air again. I'm so excited. But at the same time, I find myself in my excitement. I'm skipping a little here and a little bit there. But, you know, just bear with me, folks. You know, it takes a while sometimes to get used to a kind of a routine that you've been into for years and years and years. And all of a sudden to have a break, it feels like, wow, this is like a whole new place for me. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me right here in the studio is Sabra Briere from Indivisible Sonoma County. Welcome, Sabra. Welcome. Welcome. Do you mind if I just tell, pardon, what?
Just say something. Oh,
I can always say something.
We want to hear
your voice. We want to hear your voice. And also, I want to welcome Sue Hicks. Sue, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's hear your voice.
No, it's wonderful to be here. I was really honored that you asked me to show up today, Elaine, and happy to be here on your first time back after some...
Is this your first radio experience?
It is in a live studio. I once was on a phone call, a group phone chat, and that was broadcast on a program. It's hard to remember what it was now, many years ago. But it's the first time I've been actually in a studio.
Well, welcome. Welcome. You're definitely welcome to be here.
Thank
I'm so
you.
Happy. I'm so happy you made the time because I wanted to have somebody who's kind of a middle of the road, or not too radical, not too conservative, and I just think you're just perfect to give a report of what it was like to be at the rally yesterday. Well, you know what I'd like to do is
it's so hard. Why don't you just settle in and just AU will work. I know how hard my name is.
It's all right. Sabra. Let's do this a little bit differently.
Sure.
You're one of the organizers of Indivisible that organized this wonderful, wonderful rally. I know there were several. I think there were something like 1,200 across the country.
Something in that neighborhood, and there were a lot of impromptu, not signed-up events where someone just became inspired and stood out with a sign and got joined by their neighbors. I think we should really acknowledge all the small events that nobody signed up with the national mobilize sign up. I think that that's really important. All the little towns, all the little crossroads where somebody just said, I am so angry, I'm going to stand out here with my sign. Because that shows that there's a real movement going on.
Well, also, Indivisible has had a big part in that. And oftentimes, for myself, I forget about them. I forget that they're organizing. I forget that we're doing, because you're kind of, all of us, you're kind of quiet, you move along, and then all of a sudden, you're visible. So tell us a little bit about the organization, what its mission, how you got involved, and why you believe it's so important.
When Indivisible started, right after the first time Trump got elected. It intended to be a lobbying organization to try to get members of Congress to stop Trump's agenda. And that was using the old tactics of manipulating members of Congress by writing and calling. And some of that worked, some of that tactic worked, to slow down legislation and to stop legislation. But it was all based on the theory that there were going to be cooperative members of the Republican Party to work with. And the longer Trump was in office, the less cooperative members of the Republican Party were in that first term. We defeated Republicans, we being people within Indivisible, defeated Republicans in 2018. And the Republicans never forgot that. And so this time through, there is absolutely no cooperation with Republicans. And there is no sense in talking about finding a way to work with cooperative Republicans in Washington. I wish that wasn't the case. And lobbying doesn't work. Making calls to your members of Congress if they're not Democrats doesn't work. And the Democrats are in the minority. Calling Democrats has not been very effective right now. So we are going to the streets. We are saying, get a spine. Make more noise to our members elected in Congress.
Well, tell us about Indivisible's mission, what its mission is, and how you got involved, and how you're, what was the attraction for you?
I'm not a lapsed Democrat, but I'm a disgusted Democrat. I want Democrats who stand for the Constitution, who stand up for the rule of law, and I felt that in a lot of cases, Democrats were standing up for themselves. So I decided I was going to be working to get us back on track. And that's what was the attraction to Indivisible.
Have you had you worked as an activist before?
I've been an elected office holder. I've absolutely been a president of my Democratic Party. I've done a lot of things. So, yes, I moved here from Michigan. And before I moved here, I was all those things.
Where do you get your courage to stand up? I mean, all
my mother.
Oh, your mother. Well, tell us a little, what was your mother's name? Tell us a little bit about your mother.
My mother's mother left the DAR when there was a kerfuffle over letting a black singer sing at the Independence Hall. You may remember that story. Maybe not. I do. I won't go into those details, but my grandmother was really PO'd that the DAR wouldn't let a black singer sing.
You know, I think two or three programs ago, I actually played Marian Anderson singing that song and attributed it to what Eleanor Roosevelt did to get her to do that.
Yeah.
So your grandmother was kind of already was, you already had that in your DNA, it sounds like.
Yes. So my mother had her moments of caution, but she really believed that women could do whatever they could do. And my father never hesitated to tell me to go out and succeed, but it was my mother who definitely said, run for something when the time came.
Well, it's amazing, and really congratulations to what you pulled off, you know. Well, how did Indivisible come up with the whole idea of hands off? I mean,
Indivisible doesn't work alone. Indivisible collaborates with all the other organizations that are also upset, all the other organizations where people are upset. And so there's a group of organizations working together. I don't know which organization came up with which idea, but it was a collaborative thing. And as the idea grew, other organizations joined in. So 50501, which is 50 states, 50 capitals, one movement, joined in. The Women's March joined in. Other organizations joined in, bringing their membership along, informing their membership that this event was going to happen. I can't tell you how much that goes on in trying to make change, but every single protest event that's happened so far this year has grown like that. Indivisible took the lead on this one. But if you asked 50501 would say they took the lead. And that means there are no leaders. Everybody's taking credit, and that's as it should be.
Well, you know, I went to several leadership classes, and I studied especially with in sales training with a man by the name of Tommy Hopkins. And one of the things he said, when you have good leadership, you really don't know who the real leader is. You know, it seems like everybody just blends in and joins in and just cooperates together. I know, it's just amazing when I was looking at on Facebook and also on YouTube when they were showing some of the marches. I mean, it looked like there were some of them had 40 and 50,000 people showing up.
Absolutely.
You know, it was amazing. And, I mean, here in Santa Rosa having, you know, the Press Democrat said Santa Rosa actually had 5,000. That was
in the paper. They said 5,200.
Yeah, here in Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
When we protested the Iraq War, it was 3,000, which we thought was great when they had that die-in and everything. So, I mean, it's really, really, really amazing.
There have been so many changes in such a short time. People are really scared. And they're really angry, and they have every right to be both.
What were some of your challenges in organizing it? I mean, how did you feel the police departments and the law enforcement were cooperating with you? Do you feel that was a big deal, or were there many, many challenges?
The biggest challenge was how quickly the numbers grew, how much we didn't know what was going to happen. The second biggest challenge was that, no, we had no good communication with the city. I'm not going to fault the city for the lack of communication, but it wasn't until Thursday that I actually got to speak to got a call back from the police department where they acknowledged that they would have police out there to help with crowd control.
You know, when I was looking on, especially on YouTube, it seemed like most of the rallies were kind of incident free. It seemed it was more.
Yeah, that's absolutely so.
Do you think because they had the theme of nonviolent? What or do you just think that just people had this air of cooperation, like we're coming together as we the people?
I'm going to say something that I think is important to say, but I don't think it's kind. A lot of the people at these protest rallies are white and old. That's our turn to be protesting. I think a lot of other rallies in previous issues, Black Like Me movements, you know, the black movements, the anti-war movements, these were people that the police felt were scary. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to excuse the police for feeling that way. But they saw people saying Black Lives Matter as frightening. They saw people in my generation when I was a young person protesting about war, they saw people like me as scary. Anti-establishment, scary. But you see a bunch of people in my generation now, women out there with white hair, saying, hands off my Social Security. We are not scary. We are grandmothers. We are bakers of bread and cookies. We are not scary. We are not trying to burn down the police station. We are saying you are messing with our Constitution, and we don't like it. And the police don't find us scary, and so they're not on the wrong side of justice. And they don't see us on the wrong side of justice. And that is so wrong morally, but it's so true.
You think that's why? Do you think that's why a lot of young people are staying away?
I think it is, and I think it's fine. I also think it's fine if black people are staying away. It is wrong that the police behave that way, but it is also true.
But that's interesting, you know, because I noticed, because I know for myself, I'm a great-grandmother, and it seems that you get a little bit more respect or a little bit the idea of maybe caring a little bit more than, well, whatever their idea is. All I can say is thank God there was no issues.
At least here in Santa Rosa, there were no trucks full of yahoos either.
So you didn't find many young people. It seemed like the
there were young people with kids. There were people who were definitely young enough to be my grandchildren there. Adult people young enough to be my grandchildren there. Absolutely. But it was not scary for people who are looking for anti-establishment, anti-status quo behavior. This is a revolution about the status quo. The status quo is being shaken by this administration. This government is screwing with the status quo. They're screwing with our savings, they're screwing with our health care, they are screwing with our government, with our educational system. They are messing up our lives, our grocery bills, everything that we take for granted, they are messing up.
Well, you know, pause here for me to inject something about being grateful. You take things for granted. You know, I just went through 3 months of incredible challenges. I had 2 surgeries, and then I lost my sight, and my sight is back now because I had to have cataract surgery. But, I mean, when I'm walking around and not being able to see was just the most challenging thing I've ever had in my life. And I think that's a good idea when you start thinking about what we're losing, and that the reason we're losing it because we take it for granted. And you can't take anything for granted, because once you lose, especially freedom, once you lose freedom, it's very hard to get it back. You know, it's very difficult. So let's take a little thought here before we take our second part of our musical break. And what I want to do is I want to bring Sue Hicks in to talk about her experience during the rally. And also, if Sue, maybe you have a question or two for Sabra, you know, just feel free to ask, you know. But I think it's very important that we have this discussion about, you know, and I never thought about the idea of because we're older that we're safer. And that is a very interesting concept. So what I need to encourage all you listeners, get all your grandmothers out there, your great-grandmothers, because, you know, this is really serious. This is serious. And I know for myself, it's hard for me to sleep at night sometimes, especially being a great-grandmother. I think, my God, what's ahead for these children?
What are we leaving our children, our grandchildren, not just yours, but everybody's?
Everybody's.
What are we leaving? What kind of world are we leaving if we let these people take over?
Well, I was going to write a letter to the editor and say, "Dear editor, so glad the fetus is safe now. But the rest of the kids, they can just forget them, right?" Anyway, we're going to take a quick musical break. Let's play the second part to democracy. And then when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Sabra Bejera, who's one of the organizers of Invisible Sonoma County. And then we're going to bring Sue Hicks into the conversation, and she's going to talk about what her experience was at the rally on Saturday, April 5th. Let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that song.
It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and the worst. 'Cause it's here they've got the range and the machinery for change. And it's here they've got the spiritual thirst. And it's here the family's broken. And it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way.
Wow. I'll tell you, that song, Democracy is Coming to the USA. Oh, boy. I'll tell you, when I start thinking about it. You know, I just had my 85th birthday, and I never thought that I would ever come to a place that we're at right now, even though I know that there are things that really get you a little bit agitated. It's just amazing when you start thinking about it. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And I'm talking about, we're talking about the mobilization that happened on Saturday, April 5th in downtown Santa Rosa, and actually across the whole United States, actually across the globe. There were protests, protesting dictators and protesting some of the unfair treatment that's going on in the world. Well, during this second half, I want to bring in, I have a guest here, Sue Hicks. Sue Hicks is with me, and she was a person who went to the rally. Sue is a retired nurse, and also she's a member of the Unity Church here that I also go to, and this was very spontaneous when I found out that she went to the rally to have her on. But before, when we were taking the break, Sue, you were talking about what motivated you. Talk about what was going on in your mind, why you decided to go to that protest.
You know, my political activism was latent for the majority of my life. But I'm telling you, in 2016, when Donald Trump actually won the presidency, and I was so horrified and aghast, I decided my latent period was over, and I needed to express myself in any way I could. I was part of the initial Women's March in January of 2017. I was here in Santa Rosa wearing my pussy hat with my two daughters, my 13-year-old granddaughter, and thousands of other people. And so I became very interested in the ability of a protest to make news, to let the powers that be see that not everyone was satisfied, was going to acquiesce, was thinking business was as usual with our government. They needed to see it. They needed to hear it. So it was Donald Trump that prodded me to really become an active protester. And, you know, I also went to the Women's March we had here in March of this year, and that had about 2,500 people show up in Courthouse Square, and that was also a wonderful opportunity to gather with like-minded individuals. We had our protest signs, everybody was reading everyone else's, and the community sense of a congenial group protesting peacefully for human rights, women's rights, trans rights, any right you can think of that are being trampled now into what Trump hopes will be oblivion. He's hoping people will let him get all of his horrendous, destructive agenda through because they're afraid.
And what besides all of a sudden you're concerned about what's going on? Where'd you get the oomph, you know, to finally say, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to get my daughter to come with me, and I'm going to get my granddaughter. Where did you get that courage?
It was just natural. It was outrage. It was spontaneous. You know, it just was there, and the feeling of, you know, impotence that here we are, citizens, but we are not elected officials. We're in a somewhat smaller town in California, that we have power even when we don't have a national audience, a national voice. It just struck me that it starts with the people, and it may be a few, and it grows and it grows. And if I want to see it grow into a real demonstration that we will not acquiesce to this agenda of Trump and his administration, we have to show up. This is our time. And I also, and I did see a fair number of young people at the rally when I was there on Saturday. But as I was speaking when we were on break, that someone in my age group, you know, I'll be 80 in a month, we have decades of memory. our parents either fought in World War II, were maybe just barely too young or barely too old. We heard about what happened. We actually had on us, for the most part, some things have always been left out of our education, but we learned what Nazis, what happened, why this dictator in Germany in 1933 just was able to take over his country with his, you know, megalomania about wanting more, always more, more power, more money, more just trying to take over and squash, you know, critical thinking, squash the scientists, squash the historians, squash the people that wanted a better world. He was just expressing greed and power, and we all know who that sounds like right now.
Well, you know, Sue, you express that beautifully. You really do. I hope there's a million people out there listening, because it's so important. You know, there's a song by a woman by the name of Ellen Booksdale. It's called "By My Silence, I Give My Consent." You know, 13 million people did not vote. Does that mean they don't care? You know, what does that mean? I mean, when you live in a democracy and you're the first statement in our Constitution is we the people. If we the people do not come forward, it never happens. Go ahead.
It means they think their vote doesn't matter.
How do you convince people?
Well, you convince people their vote doesn't matter by telling them for three decades that their vote doesn't matter.
No, but I mean, how do you change that?
It's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of loudness.
Well, we need more people like women like Sue just expressing, you know, just coming out and saying it. Well, let me ask both of you, and then I want to get a little bit more on what stood out the most for you. What did you kind of walk away with? What did you walk away with, Sue, when it was all over?
I think I walked away with just that real sense that there is a growing movement and like-minded people who gather together for progress, for the good of all humanity. We do have power. It can be hard to think about, but this thought came to me that I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it. I learned that the power of the people is real and can influence the people in power, that we do have this ability. We cannot acquiesce. We cannot just take a seat back and say, oh, well, somebody else can do it. We need to do it. It is so important. We all here today, and I'm sure your listeners, were parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. We care about people. I was a nurse. I spent my entire career caring for others who were having a very unfortunate experience to land in a hospital for whatever reason. And thinking about what is happening to our country now with Robert F. Kennedy, it just makes me incensed. I just want to scream, say, wake up, parents. They are overdosing their children with vitamin A instead of vaccinating them against measles. And some of these children are getting toxic, and they're ending up in the hospital with liver toxicity from an overdose of vitamin A. And they're listening to Kennedy, who Trump appointed, who our Congress approved when they knew better. This is what infuriates me.
Well, you know something? That's why people march, because they're infuriated, and I love that. I love that. I feel infuriated too. I mean, when one child is in danger, all children are in danger. You know, your Ernest E. Deb said, "One man in jail, I am not free." I believe one child is in danger, where all children are in danger. Well, let's talk to you a little bit, Sabria. I want to get into Indivisible again. What did the group walk away with? What after you saw all these people coming out? I know there were a few speakers and all the energy and all the signs. What did you walk away with? What did you get out of this? And also, what's next?
Well, big deal. Big thing we walked away with is we need to do it again, and we need to do it again after that, because this is the lesson that I took away from the 70s. One of those people who watched what happened in the mobilization of the 70s against the war for civil rights, for women's rights, for all those things that people did in the 60s and 70s to normalize people's rights, to make everybody have rights, was we got used to thinking that it would all work out in the end. And so, you know, by the time we got into the 2000s and finally we allowed that gay people could marry each other, we thought it was all done and life was over and we could go on and have a happy life and not worry about granting rights to anybody. And in 1-2 month period, as much as possible, all those rights are being swooped away from all of us.
Right, and if we're not careful, you know, that's the whole thing about taking away Roe versus Wade, is taking away choice.
Oh, I do know.
You know, so, I mean, it's really a big deal. Well,
so what we've learned is that when you think that you've done everything and you can go live your life, you can't go live your life. As awful as that sounds, and it sounds awful to me because I still have some years left in me that I want to live my life, we have to do it again, and we have to do it again, and we have to make it louder, and we have to make it bigger, and we have to put more spine into our elected officials, and we have to elect different elected officials who are going to have better spines, who are going to actually respect our Constitution and not just give it lip service, not just here in Santa Rosa, not here in Sonoma County, but across the country. Because it turns out that when we actually say we care about this, they listen.
Or they're listening, but they're also ignoring, you know.
No, they don't ignore us if we're loud enough, if we're not scared. But, you know, people who are elected, if they don't hear from us, they think we don't care. If they don't hear our voices, they think it's okay not to hear from us. They think that we're being paid to be out here, paid to go to these rallies.
Oh, they're being paid.
And so they will ignore us if we are small, if we're quiet, if we let them get away with what they're doing. So the next one has to be big, and the one after that has to be big. And as many as possible have to be national and big and bigger. And no, I'm not happy about that because I have other things to do with my life. But this is what we're doing today.
Well, one thing I want to ask you also is to talk about, you talk about how important it is for people to call their representatives, let them know what they're thinking, not to be afraid. In fact, we had an experience this morning when I was telling Ken to call somebody, and all of a sudden he called and made a complaint, and sure enough, they took care of business, because the squeaky wheel gets a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
You know, the days of being shy are over. You know, and you know, I love what Terry Cole Whitaker said. By the way, she wrote the book, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, and I found out she's still alive, and I have, within the next month or so, hopefully we're going to get an interview with her. But what are some recommendations? The rally is over. We're looking
okay, so
for other.
What are some
recommendations that you make to folks? How can they do, and what's next for Indivisible?
Indivisible has this really wonderful website that we're always trying to improve. IndivisibleSoCo.org has a regional calendar with every activity that we can track down that's actually going to happen, from writing postcards to making phone calls to attending rallies, whether you want to protest Tesla because you want to see the stock value drop and therefore punish the guy who owns all the stock or not. It's your choice. We have planned our next rally be on the 19th of April. We're still in the final stages, so I'm not going to tell you any details about it, but we know that there are other rallies planned for that same day across the country, because that's the anniversary of the very first shot of the American Revolution, and we think that that is an appropriate day to start the next revolution, a peaceful revolution that doesn't leave most of the nation behind, a revolution that includes women and people of color and Native Americans. Seems to us it's time to have that revolution. After that, we're looking at the beginning of May. There's a series of events planned for between May 1 and May 5. Those are the next ones we're planning.
And what are those going to be about?
Planning stage. Don't have the details yet. We just have the dates and the partnerships that we're working with.
Well, I want to throw something in. Oops, we've got only 3 minutes left, so let's get last words in. Well, this has been an amazing show. I just want to thank both of you. I want to thank you for being here, Sabrina. You know, I don't know why I'm having such a hard time.
Because it's a tough name. My father stuck me with that.
Sabra. Any last words that you would like to tell our listeners?
Join your friends and come whenever you get the opportunity. Your voice matters.
Will you give your website one more time?
IndivisibleSoCo.org.
Okay, and you'll find all that information on www.womenspaces.com. And how about you, Sue? Any last words, any questions, anything that's hot on your mind?
I could go on forever, but one thing I would like to quote, it came from a Greek poet back in the 70s, and it became very popular in Mexico when the 43 students and teachers disappeared in, like, 2013. And it is this quote, "They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds."
Wow. They tried to bury us, but they didn't realize we were seeds.
Yes. We will rise.
Pardon? What?
You guys are speaking in the mic.
Oh, I have to speak in the mic? Or Sue has to speak in
you.
The mic? Oh, okay. Well, ladies, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here, and thank you for sharing, and thank you so much for being, and thank you for all that you do, and thank you for your courage, both of you. And this has been wonderful, my first show after all this time. You know, I've been excited and nervous and all kinds of different things happening. And I just want to tell my listeners there's two things on Monday, April 28th from 6 to 7:30. If you go to the League of Women Voters Sonoma County on their website, they're going to be having a special workshops for women who want to run for office. I think it's very, very, very important. And then on April 10th, which is just around the corner, the Commission on the Status of Women here in Sonoma County is going to be having a Zoom, and they're going to be talking about unhoused and unheard, the silent struggles of women in Sonoma County, which I think is very, very, very interesting. If you go on to their website, the Commission of Status of Women, you'll find all the information, and it also will be on www.womenspaces.com. Well, you know, this was a heavy, kind of a heavy-duty experience for me, talking about the rally that happened, seeing all the people that are out there, you know, and knowing that we're all going through the same thing, a lot of fear, a lot of frustration. You know, hands off. It's almost like saying, hands off your life. You know, get off of my back. You know, I mean, I don't understand. You know, I still have to scratch my head around abortion. You know, all of this started to, we want to get Supreme Court people on the Supreme Court so they can get rid of Roe versus Wade and all these different things that were happening. And here we are today. You know, so we got our way. You know, we're protecting the fetus, but the children, what is happening to them? And we have to start thinking about that. You know, sometimes I think that we make decisions that just don't make sense. You know, I mean, when you have a child, you know, the fetus grows, and, you know, I'm going to be a great-grandmother for the third time. You know, I'm watching this little, my daughter, my granddaughter getting heavier and heavier. You know, they show you the ultrasound and all this other stuff, and this is a live being that maybe that's coming forward. She's going to have a little boy. And I think to myself, oh, my God, a little boy, is there going to be so many wars that he's going to be drafted? So there's a lot to think about, but the most important thing to remember, by your silence, you're giving your consent. And if you don't vote, you're just saying, go ahead, well, dictator, who cares? It doesn't matter. Well, it matters to me, and I think it's very important that it should matter to you, and it also mattered for the women and the men who organized this fantastically successful rally. It mattered enough to them where they took the time and the energy to make sure that we all gathered. Anyway, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here and for listening to two of my guests. I had Sue Hicks, who actually attended the rally, and she really gave some fiery information, some really suggestions, and I was really, really happy to hear. It's wonderful when you hear the public speak. And also to Sabra Briare, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all you do. You've been listening to Women's Spaces, and like I do at the end of every show, remind you, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 7th, 2025.